Now we move on to the second reading, which is, as it has been for several weeks now, from the letter to the Hebrews. Now the letter to the Hebrews centers around the feast of Yom Kippur. Most of the other texts are around Pesach, around Passover. But this is trying to describe the effects of the act of love in which Jesus died. He penetrates all of the heavens, right to the very throne of God, right to the Holy of Holies, and makes atonement for all sin, and stays there as a priest, always living. What does a priest do? Making intercession for us. And that's his priesthood now. He gladly stands there in the Holy of Holies and shows himself to his Father, interceding for us. He's our priest. And that act is fixed at the Eucharist in him, as he's there fixed in that act of love, because that bread and wine become his body and blood. They become him. And so the invitation in the Mass is for us to join his priesthood and to give ourselves unreservedly to the Father. And if we let the Lord work on us long enough, then at Mass we will penetrate through the curtain to heaven. That's happened to some of the great saints. They've seen what goes on in heaven. Now the part of the text we have today is Hebrews 7, 23 to 28. And it's describing why Jesus sums up in himself the whole Levitical priesthood, even though he's not a Levitical priest. He's a priest according to the order of Melchizedek, which is a very mysterious thing, which the author will pick up in a little bit here, but then a lot later on in the letter, which we'll see as we go through the letter. Okay. Brothers and sisters, the Levitical priests were many because they were prevented by death from remaining in office. But Jesus, because he remains forever, has a priesthood that does not pass away. He is a priest le'olam. He is a priest forever. And he exercises his priestly functions forever. Now, he's a priest standing there in the Holy of Holies, in the very presence of his Father, interceding for us, showing the Father his wounds and the power of the act of love in which he's fixed forever, in which he died. And the Father is ravished, looking at the human heart of his Son and seeing it so filled with love. And that's the source of the mercy in which we are bathed. It's from there that all the power of sacramental confession comes. From the heart of Christ, unsullied, perfectly pure, strong, whole, before the Father, and working forgiveness. And that's what's imputed, no, confided to us. It's not imputed. Okay. The other priests, you see, were prevented by death from doing this, but Jesus, because he remains forever, has a priesthood that does not pass away. Therefore, he is always able to save those who approach God through him, since he lives forever to make intercession for them. That's all he does in heaven. He gathers up all of us and holds them before the Father so that we will be blessed and forgiven, enlightened and made holy, enable ourselves then, as we die, to penetrate the veil and join Jesus before the Father and join him in his intercession. Now that's Mass. At Mass, sacramentally, we penetrate that veil and we're there before the Father with Jesus, showing Jesus to the Father and joining ourselves to the Jesus we show. It's not just all Jesus. It's his whole body. And that's what Mass is all about. But you see, it's the penetrating of the veil. And that's the priesthood of Jesus, and why he is a priest forever. You don't need another priest. He's living. He doesn't die. And he's there before the Father. And so, always able to save those, who come to God through him, since he lives forever to make intercession for them. That's the priesthood of Jesus. He's called here, you'll see the phrase here and there, he's made perfect. That means he's ordained a priest. And I'll try to explain that a little later. It is fitting that we should have such a high priest. Why is it fitting? Because it's fitting the generosity of God. Not that we deserve it. Now this man, this author, and we still don't know who he is, even the great Origen said, as to the author of this letter, nobody knows, only God knows who wrote it. But it's a mystic and a genius, and the most sophisticated theologian of the Old Testament, I would think, along with John, I guess, in the whole of the New Testament. And so, it is fitting, which is a very interesting word, isn't it? It's fitting. It's the right thing to do. You see, sometimes when we're trying to understand something that God's done, all we can do is ask if it's fitting. If he did it, it's fitting. I'll give you an example. This is a big one. Aquinas asked the question whether it was fitting for God to become incarnate. And one of the objections is no. God we worship and honor and revere. Becoming incarnate, he's one like us, and we treat him like that, and finally we're going to kill him. It wasn't fitting. You see? Now he investigates the fittingness. He says, it is fitting. Because you have to judge the fittingness of an act into whether or not it achieves the goal for which the act was placed. God, in coming among us and dying on the cross, had one goal in mind, to win us over by love. And therefore, becoming man and dying on the cross is most fitting, because it accomplishes his goal. You understand? It's not that we can say, all gods must die for their people. Jesus is God. He dies for his people. No, we can't. That's a syllogism. But no, you look at the fittingness because it achieves what he was after. He has no need, as did the high priest, to offer sacrifice day after day, first for his own sins and then for those of the people. He did that once for all when he offered himself. All the other priests offer animals. Jesus offers himself. And that's why when we are saying Mass, we are told, imitate what you're doing. Offer yourself to the Father with Jesus. Imitamini quod tractatis, son. That's in the ordination rite. Imitate what you're doing. You're offering up the act of Jesus and the act of love in which he's fixed forever. That act of love in which he died. You've got to be in on that. That's your vocation, to imitate Christ and to be that and to have that act of love in which he died present here physically in your body. You see? For the law appoints men subject to weakness to be high priests, but the word of the oath, which was taken after the law, that word of the oath at Psalm 110, you are a priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek, not Levi. Melchizedek, you see? But the word of the oath, which was taken after the law, appoints a son who has been made perfect forever. And that's the perfect, it means the moral perfection of the heroicity of the act of love in which he died in all that pain and darkness, abandoned seemingly even by his father, and offering it all up for those who were killing him. That's perfect. That's the perfection of a human act, measured by God's standards. But it means more than that. It means as well, he was ordained. In the Hebrew Bible, the description of how you ordain somebody is mile hayadayim, to fill the hands, give them something to offer. Then you give a priest something to offer. That's the ordination, right? And he offers it. Okay. Jesus offered himself. So that's what made him perfect. You see, his ordination was his self-offering. And that's why he's a priest forever. We don't need any other priest. All of us share in some tiny way in that priesthood. There's not another one. And that's why we're told, imitate what you're doing. This is my body. This is my blood. Here is the Lamb of God who takes away the sins of the world. That's fine. Are you in on it? But not just the priest. Are you in on it? You're there to offer yourself to God the Father in union with Jesus for your own life, your own sins, and for the whole world. If you're baptized, you have the world on your back. And there's nothing you can do about it except carry it with love, alacrity, and joy. Because the whole world is there. You've got to understand that. You know, when St. Francis spent a long time up on the top of the mountain in a hermitage, praying. And he was a hard worker, but he was up there a long time. So finally Clare sent him a word from the Lord and said, I have not called you for yourself, Francis. Come down from that mountain and preach to my people. Everybody hears that. I didn't call you to be a Christian just for yourself. I called you to be a Christian so that the world can be sanctified. People can see and hear you and be brought to me who were not preached to, were brought up atheists or some other religion, or they've got to come to me and they'll come through you. And that's why he says that, you see. He's made a son perfect forever. And he's there, you see, in the Holy of Holies, the heavenly Holy of Holies, of which we have no glimpse, or maybe a tiny glimpse, of what that is. To be in the direct presence of the Trinity, with your body, and filled with the light of God, and the Trinity dwelling in you, and pulsating in you, and living in you, and the life of the Trinity within you is what keeps your body alive for all eternity. And the act of love in which you die, you're perpetuated in. I remember I had a friend who had a heart attack, Franciscan, and he said, you know, there I was, dying, I guess, and I was just sleepy. I wasn't doing anything. Well, I didn't die, so I made up my mind every night when I go to sleep, as I'm going off to sleep, I'm going to be practicing acts of love. Lord, I love you. Lord, I love you. Jesus, I love you. So I fall asleep saying these acts of love, so that when I die, that's what I'll be doing. I'll be making acts of love. Lord, I love you. I wasn't around when he died, but I hear that's what he did. He learned from the close call, so he practiced. So when he does give his surrender his whole life to God, he's saying, I love you, which is exactly what Jesus did when he died. You see? And that is priesthood. That's what it's all about. Joining Jesus in the act of love in which he died. Okay?